It was on this day, January 22nd, 1962, Spud Runtley was sent to the grocery store to buy, of all things, potatoes. To say that Spud was a man of extremely small stature would be like saying he made Tom Thumb look like Wilt Chamberlain. And in coming back from the store, Spud, being tired from the weight of the potatoes, laid down under a tree to rest, falling fast asleep. Now, some of the town's rowdy teddy boys noticed him there, asleep under the tree, with his mouth wide open and snoring. Well, they took 8 potatoes from the sack and dropped them down Spud Runtley's throat. And it was then that these teddy boys made history by creating that now famous commercial.
You put 8 great potatoes in that little bitty man, you know who, you know who, you know who.
It happened this day. Better or bitter known, depending on how you look at it, as
it happened this day, I think.
It was on this day, January 23rd, 19 and or 35, in the sprawling town of Sprawl, New Hampshire, Bruce Ronick and his lovely wife Ira, Ira for short, had an argument. Ira's ire was up. Ira hit him hard with a pair of ice tongs she had just received for their silver wedding anniversary. Bruce's hair was so thick, the tongs became enmeshed deeply and could not become extricated. Ironic, his lovely wife, decided she'd rather have her husband go through life with the ice tongs because she did not want his hair cut. And as a constant reminder, they should never argue again. Besides, if the hair got long enough, it would cover the ice tongs. And besides, if the hair got long enough, he might become a rock and roll star and make a small fortune and a small impression on the American scene. Well, Bruce felt a little silly in public, you know, when people would... look at that silly fellow over there. Would snicker at him for having these ignominious ice tongs protruding from his disheveled hair. And so it was on this date, just 27 years ago, after Bruce asked that Ira please have that strange object removed, that she made history when she replied, "Keep a silver tong in your head."
January 25, 18 and or 49. Just as this is a tense moment for you, so was this a tense day for Myrtle Beach of Moose Tooth, Minnesota. Myrtle was completing an extensive course at cooking school, and this was final exam day. My, but she was nervous. Things did not go too well at first. While preparing the mock turtle soup, one of the mock turtles jumped out of the pot. Then, her Hungarian goulash turned out too much goo and not enough losh. So you can imagine how she felt when the exam paper instructed her to fix for dessert some twisted pieces of batter dipped in bubbling deep fat. Myrtle had never prepared such a thing. However, she did as she was instructed and thereby made history.
By becoming the first student to pass an exam with frying crullers.
Good for Myrtle. But is it good for the show?
And this day, I think.
January 28, 1762. In a small town in New England lived a fine baker. He had a son named John, whom he had fond hopes would follow him into the ancient and honorable baker's trade. John, however, who really wanted to be a poet, in his great indecision spent half of his time writing poetry and the other half baking in his father's shop. Even when he wanted to marry Mary, the daughter of the village cobbler, he could not decide, would it be poetry or would it be baking? Mary's father, however, was firm and refused to allow the marriage to take place until John was firmly established in a career. In fact, he made history when he summed up the whole affair, turned to John and said,
"My boy, before you can marry Mary, I must know if it will be for batter or for verse."
It happened this day.
I think.
January 29, 19 and 26. One of the great operatic sopranos of all time, Madame Nellie Melba, the toast of New York, was preparing for another one of her magnificent performances at the Met. For 30 years, she had drawn ovations from opera lovers all over the world for her tremendous voice and the ease with which she performed the most difficult of vocal gymnastics. She was especially adept at performing the demanding quavers and trills which most roles called for. And now, as she began warming up in her dressing room for the first time, the thought occurred to her that maybe she should hang up her blonde wig. And she expressed the reason for that thought when she sat down and wrote the now classic aria,
"The Trill Is Gone."
It happened this day.
It happened this day, I think.
It was on this date, January 30th, 1901. The annual Arid California Spelling Bee was in full swing. From all over the Golden State, the contestants had assembled to vie for the big prize, a two-week trip to Florida one way. So far, little Paul Palmetto had survived such toughies as cat, dog, existentialism, and redundancy. And now, in round five, he was up against the word weather, as in whether or not. Little Paul thought hard and long and finally came up with
W-E-D-D-E-R.
And little Paul Palmetto thereby became famous.
For this was undoubtedly the worst spell of weather in the history of Florida.
January 31st, 1891. Perhaps England's wealthiest nobleman, as well as noblest wealthy man, was Count Percival Leppingwell. Unfortunately, he was getting a bit frail of health, and his doctor advised that he leave dear old England for some more pleasant climates, specifically the state of Florida in the former colonies. On this day, Count Leppingwell arrived at a Florida cape and moved into a luxurious villa there. It was thus he made history by becoming the first count down at Cape Canaveral.
It happened this day. I think.
January 1st, 19 and 21. For 56 years, Ebenezer Nobby had been running his little candy and soda store at the corner of Broadway and 210th Street in Branchwater, Kentucky. Good old Nezer Nobby. How the kids loved him. And deservedly so. Nezer treated everyone with that personal attention, that extra effort that showed he cared. On this day, for example, a customer came in, asked for a carton of soda, which he wanted gift-wrapped. Ebenezer sent his assistant to the back of the store to wrap the carton of soda. The assistant called to say that all the good white paper had been used up during the Christmas rush. Ebenezer remembered that he had some nice blue paper back there, and it was then that he coined the phrase, which later became a great standard when he shouted, "Wrap soda in blue!" And if that doesn't cause Paul Whiteman to change his theme, I don't know what will. It happened this day, I think. February 4, 1956. This was a mighty big day for the Muscle-Bound Sporting Goods Manufacturing Company. One of their researchers had just completed a project that was going to put Muscle-Bound Sporting Goods on the map. A brand new, crease-resistant synthetic material for football uniforms. With this, Muscle-Bound was going to make history by, at long last, getting football players out of that creasy grid stuff.
It happened this day,
I think. I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. It's 5 minutes before 8. Try once again and see if maybe your friend and... There they are. The Trumpeters 7. Musicians Union 5. February 5th, the year 3. It seemed that in those days of mankind, the world was divided into many areas with different customs. Most important of these differences lay in the type of meat that each group of inhabitants of a particular geographical area ate. For example, in one island, Ing, all the inhabitants ate only pork. On the island of Krebshina, the populace ate only beef, while the Sapperdong Island people ate, of all things, rodents. Things went along nicely until the unfortunate Mortimer Grebe, while dwelling on the island of Ing, displeased the king of Ing in a manner which we had best not mention, and in punishment was banished to the island of Sapperdong. Thus, poor Mortimer was the first man to make history by being forced to go from a ham-to-mouse existence.
It happened this day,
I think. February
February 6th, 19 and 31. A day to remember, much like today.
Yes.
Nikita O'Brien had been putting on quite a bit of weight lately, and he was beginning to get worried. On this day, Nikita just happened to run into his doctor, and being somewhat of a tightwad, he figured he might as well pump the old boy for some free advice. The doctor, being a kindly soul, told Nick to get on a bicycle and use it every day. Nick then wanted to know whether this was the way the doctor kept his weight down. It was then that the physician coined the now immortal phrase when he shook his head and said, "Not me. After all, a bargain doc never bites."
It happened this very day.
It was on this date, February 7, 1951, plus tax, in the little town of Uttermilch, Nebraska, Farmer Herd Hatfield had had his problems with his polled Herefords. He polled them and he kept coming up short. Suddenly he discovered the problem. He was riding the fence one day and he noticed that someone had knocked a hole in the fence and the cows were drifting away, doing the cow-cow boogie as they wandered off into the gathering dust. Well, as you can imagine, this hurt Herd a great deal. And so, singing the tune of "Don't Fence Me In," he repaired the hole and then headed back to drive his herd back to the milking barn. Well, as might be guessed, he stood at the gate watching as his cows went by, and he counted 1, 2, 3, 4, so forth and on and up, 53. And then suddenly he looked around and his last cow was missing. And it was then that Herd Hatfield of Uttermilch, Nebraska uttered the famous phrase when he said, "Cow 54, where are you?" Well, there you are. I thought you'd never come in.
Our guest historian this morning, D.H. Lemmer of Berkeley. It was on this date, February 8th, 1163. It had been a bad summer and fall for Damascus. First, there had been a devastating swarm of locusts, and then a scourge of crusaders burning and pillaging the surrounding countryside. Al-Khwarizmi, the algebraist, known to his friends as Al, had spent these days in his backyard sandbox drawing symbols in the sand. The handsome young man next door had ridden out each morning on his milk-white stallion, brandishing his gleaming scimitar in search of prowling crusaders. Al's big old wife, Fawzia, had chided her husband for his un-Arabian activity, often referring pointedly to the brave young man next door. Al had replied heatedly that the only way to bring peace to the world was to invent the ICBM. "What is that?" nagged his wife.
"Well, I don't quite know," replied the algebraist. "But it should be developed in about 800 years. Right now, I have to begin by inventing algebra." And Al would return to the backyard and X the unknown.
While her husband was away fighting crusaders, the beautiful wife of the man next door, Nausea by name, was wont to lean over the back fence and watch Al manipulate the X's. She encouraged him to seek other letters, too. Soon, both discovered the romance of algebra. On this date, February 8th, with the usual double ceremony, Al divorced Fawzia and married Nausea. Thus it was that Al became the first algebraist to substitute a wife for an X.
I think.
13, 1891. The British colonists, led by General Richard Ipswich, were pushing deeper, ever deeper into Central Africa. On this day, progress was suddenly blocked by a group of fierce Zulu warriors who refused to let the British through their territory. General Ipswich wanted to prevent bloodshed at all costs. He sent an emissary to the Zulus with the message that the British colonists meant no harm, that they merely wanted to pass through their territory. But the Zulus were adamant. They absolutely refused to let the colonists through. General Ipswich, a resourceful man, sent another message in which he stated that if the Zulus let them through, he would be willing to give them several buckets full of beads and or trinkets. It was then that the message came back from the emissary, which later became a great song. The message read, Zulus back and down.
Six minutes before the hour, on Valentine's Day, the day of the Rest-a-thon. And on this day in history, what do you suppose happened? Perhaps we're making history of sorts today. But let's look backward, turn backward in time, to February 14th, 1900 and or 10. These were the days when the circus owners, from Barnum and Ringling Brothers down, sponsored a talent scout festival to procure new freaks for their sideshows. It was a week-long event held each winter at Cape Canaveras, Georgia. Each year, more than 500 eager contestants came from all over the country to demonstrate their qualification for Freaksville, USA. It was sort of a Miss America contest, so to speak. This year, by no means the least of the contestants, was golden-haired Ruthie Valley. Ruthie was a big one, all right. She not only tipped the scales at 634 pounds, she busted them. On this day, the judges asked her why she thought she deserved a place on the midway. It was then that she coined the immortal phrase, which later became a great song hit for her namesake, when she said, I'm just a bag of blonde blubber.
It happened this day, by George.
Sheer embarrassment in the British State Department. Outside of the sheer embarrassment of the British State Department, what's new? I have an answer. Certainly we don't have to apologize for...
Happened this day, I think.
August 1st, 1933. It was in the sleepy little town of Sigma, West Virginia, where Gertrude Harmonschlager, the town's teenage beauty, was studying home economics at the local high school. Gertrude's brains, unfortunately, did not match her Pulchritude, and for weeks she failed to pass the test for making apple pie. Not only did her pie fillings turn out too big for the pie pans, but they invariably tasted too sour. So finally, Gertrude tried something new. She used only one apple, and she added 3 pounds of sugar. And friends, the result is history. This effort turned out to be the first, the original sweet tart of Sigma High.
It happened this day, I think.